Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
One of the pillars of any community around Ireland is the pharmacy. The pharmacy plays such a pivotal role in educating patients about medication usage, side effects, general health, and much, much more. But with recruitment experts expecting a shortage of pharmacy technicians and supervising pharmacies to continue in 2025, coupled with an increase in demands and a pay freeze still in place since the financial crash of 2008, just what is the current state of the Irish pharmacy sector? Well, joining me to discuss all of that now is Sheena Mitchell. She is independent pharmacist at Milltown Total Health Pharmacy in Dublin. Cathy Marr is the chair of the Irish Pharmaceutical Contracts Committee, who runs Haven Pharmacy in Duleek, County Meath, and Eamon Brady, community pharmacist with Whelan's Pharmacy in Mullingar. Sheena, I might start with you. Tell us a little bit about your own background, the pharmacy that you run, and what it is like in that kind of community pharmacy sector.
Yeah, so I grew up as a third generation pharmacist. So very much, I suppose, learning from my dad the role of a community pharmacist and how important it is within towns and villages all over Ireland. So I trained in Scotland as a pharmacist, met my husband, and we moved back in 2007. And I suppose I wanted to emulate that compassion and care that my father had in the community of Castlereagh, but I wanted to do it in Dublin. So I bought Milltown Total Health Pharmacy in 2008. And the thing that shocked me most about Dublin, being a country girl, is that Dublin is just a bundle of small villages. So there was very much a wonderful community feel, and I was welcomed into that. And a lot of the team who worked with me, or who worked in the pharmacy prior to my takeover, are still there today. So we're definitely a big part of the community, and it's a wonderful place to
work.
But
you see that the community nature that exists in small towns just transferred to a bigger place but still exists in its own right, and is there that need within Dublin as well for that one-to-one connection? Like do you think it's the same?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've seen it obviously in a rural setting, and now in an urban setting the needs of the patients are very similar. So we serve a huge varied demographic. So you can have a lot of elderly people who maybe don't have great family support. There's a lot of maybe young, nervous mothers or parents who are out there trying to navigate their child's health journey. And even just, I suppose, in those day-to-day interactions that we have with people of all ages, we often spot potentially warning signs that may be triggers for us to maybe suggest going to the doctor, and things like taking blood pressure readings, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that with more and more people having problems accessing GPs and warnings about hospital visits and the delays and everything, are leaning more and more on their pharmacies to give them advice before they actually even entered the system, as it were. Cathy, you trained in Northern Ireland, am I right? Just tell us a little bit about your pathway to becoming a local pharmacy in Duleek. How did that happen?
It's a little bit of a journey, but I did. I went to Queen's University in Belfast, and within months of my graduation and training completion, I moved to the south of Ireland because I could see, having worked in the UK, I can see that the volume driven, that kind of almost like a factory sense of dispensing. And I wanted to spend my time really counselling patients, speaking to the public and really working.
Is there a big difference between how pharmacies are operated or engaged with in the UK compared to here?
There's a very big difference in the NHS model and the Irish model, and pharmacists in Ireland certainly have a bigger opportunity to spend speaking to their patients. And even now, 25 years on practice, I can see when I look at the UK now, pharmacies are closing at a rate of 4 per week. We see pharmacy deserts such as Portsmouth, Brighton, places that really...
4 per week, did you say?
4 per week, and there's been more than 700 pharmacies close in the past 2 years, which is an alarming rate, and that's because the NHS, unfortunately, has stood still. Having moved to the Republic of Ireland, I began working in Dublin, worked around some of the addiction centres, and then I moved to work in the village of Duleek. I worked there for 5 years, and then myself and husband bought that. He's a pharmacist as well, and we bought that in 2005. We then opened a second pharmacy in 2008, and the financial crash happened 2 to 3 months later, which, as a business owner, it's, you're emotionally attached, you're providing care in a community, and then having to close a pharmacy, you're really, you feel like you're letting your staff down, you're employing the local, you know, everyone from the local area. and you're letting your patients down. So we had to do a huge realignment of how do we survive in our existing pharmacy.
What, did you close one down or two?
We closed one. Yeah. And, you know, from the outside, people can often look and say, gosh, they're doing really well because you're open. Mm. But actually, as a pharmacist and a business owner, you're thinking, I can't pay my staff this week. Mm. Or how am I going to survive this? So we did close that pharmacy in 2012. After we had our third child, we went back and said, you know what, we have to balance the quality of life of our family. We have to balance the quality of life and the service that we give. So we put everything in to the pharmacy that we have now, Haven Pharmacy in Duleek.
And it is one of those businesses that I'm sure is like a 24/7 business, Eamon. Like many pharmacies around the country, it's not enough just to provide the dispensing. Maybe tell us a little bit about your own business, what you run and how your business diversified beyond what we would normally expect from a high street pharmacy. Yeah.
So, unlike my colleagues here, I have no background, or sorry, family background in pharmacy. So I was just interested in healthcare and I chose pharmacy.
And were you in the healthcare sector?
No. I went straight from Leave Desert to Scotland, like Sheena there. And I worked for Boots for 2 years in the UK, which, as was alluded to, very volume driven. And, you know, getting a chance to speak to the customer or the patient was a challenge, you know. So I got the opportunity, I got offered a job in Mullingar and I thought I'd stay for maybe 6 months. And that was 22 years ago, or 23 years ago now. So
Mullingar must be a great place. That's two people we've had on the show this morning who love it there.
Yeah, it's a thriving town, you know. It's a good place to end up, you know. I'm from Longford up the road, so it wasn't too
as
far
am
away.
I. So,
very good. So I was working for Whelan's, which was is an old fashioned, I suppose you'd say a traditional high street pharmacy. It's there since 1897, and then I got the opportunity to buy it in 2005. The Celtic Tiger was still on, so the bank was willing to lend. We like traditional high street pharmacy, but we supply nursing homes, so very on a small scale initially, but I suppose as we got to, you know, myself and my staff got to know the business, it's we expanded the nursing home the supply of medication, which it's a lot more than just the supply of medication, because you're doing medication audits, medication reviews.
And, so you have that relationship with them. It's constantly evolving. But I'd say it's a big undertaking because there's a lot of regulatory issues around that.
There is. Because it has become more challenging for nursing homes. In a good way, like with HICWA. HICWA have really, increased the compliance, I suppose, of nursing homes, you know, in general. And but then that has brought more work for us, which I suppose is unpaid for, you know. And as you say, the 24-hour nature, you know, it's like nursing homes aren't hospitals. It's not like you probably be called at 3 in the morning, but you'll be called in out of hours and that, you know.
So I actually, going back to
Whelan's and the High Street, and then because the nursing home side of the business outgrew that, we opened, myself and my team, I opened Whelan's Clonmore in 2017, which is in the edge of Mullingar. It's a warehouse type pharmacy. So,
and this is a kind of warehouse pharmacy supply system.
We are open to the public, but it's probably 80% of the business there would be nursing homes. Mm. We have a robot, like a lot of pharmacies would have, and it automates the service.
Okay, so you're not depending on humans to do this. They're just working off prescriptions and fulfilling the orders themselves. That's a huge introduction of AI into the business already.
Yeah, you still need humans because the meds still have to be checked by the pharmacist.
Okay,
you know, so just it's more efficiency. It makes, you know, like allows myself and the team do more than we want to do, like speak to the patients and, you know, so
It's funny because all three of you have mentioned one word repeatedly and it comes back to care, you know, so there is that sort of vocational element to it and the connection to local community. But Cathy, I wanted to ask you about how behind the counter, as patients' needs are evolving, and I'm sure this is an area where pharmaceuticals are changing, upgrading, generic supplies coming on, all that. Is there a lifelong learning element to it for you to be a pharmacist?
There is. We're mandated by a regulator that we do complete CPD, continuing professional development. So we must stay relevant in our practice. And that's a really good thing, because it means as we look forward to extending the role of the pharmacist, and we've seen that in the Pharmacy Task Force that recommends a number of extensions to the role, that we are practicing at the top of our game, that we are recognised and acknowledged as highly skilled, highly trained healthcare professionals and clinicians. Part of us, our own pharmacy, in trying to really provide the best care that we can, we make sure all of our staff are highly trained, or they've completed the medicines counter assisting course. Our technicians, we have 4 technicians, so they're all highly trained, and the pharmacists within our team, that everyone is working to the top of their scope. We also then decided to make our own pharmacy a health hub, which it is anyway in part of the community, but because we know we're trading on our professional standards and quality, I then set about becoming an expert in certain fields. So for the diplomas in palliative care, further diplomas in cardiac care, respiratory care, and I've completed one in women's healthcare, because we know that at the minute women's healthcare is very topical. So with that, then we deliver that. We do out of pharmacy hours, talks and education services to patients, because we really feel that involving patients in their health journey and making that a shared decision, that a patient can decide, is this the right treatment for me that's been recommended? What happens if I don't engage? What happens if I do engage? And let's go and talk to the pharmacist and see what is the best way to manage my health.
Cathy, aside from the care side of things, there's a business element to all of this, right? You know, you've got to pay staff, you've got to make it worthwhile for yourselves as well. Beyond the that function of medicine and medical advice, I mean, I see pharmacies changing almost right before our eyes. Is it the case that there's not enough there, and that people have to add other things like toiletries, makeup and stuff like that? Do you see that something that's growing, or are we going to lose that kind of community pharmacy only offering on the high streets like Mullingar, like Edgerstown and those places where we would have before, you know? And if it's necessary to grow the business to that extent, are those small pharmacies going to be viable in the future?
So here is where we're facing a key issue. So community pharmacies, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, have had a 16-year pay freeze. So the state represent 82% of our business. So when we're trying to make ends meet, I mean, since my pharmacy ownership in 2008, there's been several months where I haven't been able to take a wage and have relied on my husband's wage, just so that my staff get paid and the doors stay open. That is the reality. As Cathy said, sometimes it can look lovely from the outside. And in no way, shape or form am I saying that community pharmacists are on the breadline. Community pharmacists who are employees have a professional wage as they are entitled to. But community pharmacy owners are really at risk here. And many of them are also pharmacists themselves embedded within their communities. So a lot of pharmacies, I suppose, models of success at the moment that we're seeing are doing huge, huge scale impersonal service. And a lot of them are coming from, say, multinationals.
So these are ones where you see small pharmacy then getting involved in a chain or something and morphing into that?
It kind of depends. At the moment, I think the landscape, if you're talking about, this is why I wrote a letter, an open letter to the new Minister for Health recently, because I'm like, well, do you want community health hubs or do you want us selling fake tan? Ultimately, we can't do both. If we're relying on selling toiletries, I think you're going to see a lot of consolidation within the market. And for me, that would be criminal, because we can see that Sláinte Care is underpinned by the WHO values and also the United Nations Sustainable Goals, which all allude to the need for access to care within people's communities. So the fact that we have walk-in healthcare professionals in 1,900 locations all over Ireland is a huge asset to the state, and it's something that can't be risked with. And this is why I think it's so important that our core service fees are addressed so that we can make this model sustainable. And we know that we have the Export Task Force report, which clearly highlights, as does Sláinte Care, that there is a need for an increased role to help the rest of the service health system, which aren't able to cope. We can actually help to relieve that a lot, but not if we are not fully supported in our roles. So we need all of those pharmacies open. We need equitable access to healthcare. We need our most vulnerable to be cared for. And often, you know, it's in a sad state. Like earlier, you mentioned the health system. Well, actually, community pharmacies and preventative health should form part of that health system.
I think many people, like, who are using the system see pharmacies as part of the system, maybe a gateway into the system. Or for someone like me who doesn't want to get into the system, it's my first port of call. Can the pharmacist fix me? I don't really want to go to the doctor. Cathy, you're just nodding away there at what Sheena has been saying. I'm just wondering about those percentages. 82% of business dependent on the state. So that's 18% of the business that isn't. That's a very complex kind of thing to try and even get your head around.
Absolutely.
How a sector could allow itself, if you want to put it that way, sorry, to become that dependent on the state.
I suppose to break it down, and it doesn't look that way, because when you walk into a pharmacy, most of the floor space or a lot of the floor space might be dedicated to the likes of toiletries and that, but actually it's exactly that. 82% of our income is dependent on the state, and that's the average pharmacy. I would be mostly medical cards, so I actually would be higher even level than that. Then another 10 to 12% will be dependent on your over-the-counter medicines. So it's still a health and wellness section, so it's over-the-counter medicines and first aid and vitamins.
Mm.
So the toiletries and all of that, that's at the very, very small. That's the nicety that's added on while people are waiting. However, it's not that we let ourselves get into that. As Ireland and Sláintecare strives towards a universal healthcare model, and we try to make healthcare more affordable, more people fall into the net, whether within the community drug schemes, that being a medical card, long-term illness scheme, a drug payment scheme. And with that, the fees are fixed. The fees are fixed since 2009. And not only are they fixed, they have reduced. The average dispensing fee has dropped by 25.7% since 2009. So my professional service fee that I'm mandated to do, look after patients, give them the clinical care and advice that they need and deserve and that I want to do as a pharmacist, the fees have dropped substantially. We also have a time where demographically, we're living longer, we're looking after people more. We have a GP service that's cracked, and yet my cost of doing business is rising and rising.
There's a lot of things that we could unpick in that one. Eamon, I just want to bring you back in before we have to finish up. The cost of running a business for a pharmacy is the same as everybody else. You know, those challenges, are you finding any kind of light at the end of the tunnel where you might be?
Yeah, not at the moment. You know, like for myself, like a lot of pharmacies, you know, like for my high street pharmacy, we've introduced new services, you know, like brought in therapists, like nearly like a health hub, what Cathy alluded to, where we have a chartered physiotherapist and audiologist and chiropodist and that, you know, and it does help with income, but it's definitely been more challenging, you know, like I've even seen since 2017, you know, so 80%, 82% of your income, and I would be slightly higher because of nursing homes, a higher medical card. So it's definitely more of a challenge to provide a service that you want to, you know. So.
And that's it. That's it, really. You're just, at the end of the day, dealing with all the same problems that everybody else is in Ireland across the SME sector. And that's fundamentally what it is. You've got to deal with those as well as the other issues. Guys, listen, this is a very complex area and it's a very interesting one. And I wish we had more time to talk about it, but I'm afraid time is upon us now. Thank you all so much for coming into studio and telling us your own unique stories. That was Sheena Mitchell, independent pharmacist at Milltown Total Health Pharmacy in Dublin. Cathy Maher, chair of the IPU Pharma Contractors Committee, who also runs Haven Pharmacy in Julie County Meath. And Eamon Brady, community pharmacist with Whelan's Pharmacy in Mullingar. Thank you all very much.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.